Welcome to MTG Pro Tutor, your gathering of insights, tips, and advice from renowned players and community icons. Connect with venerated teachers to gain the knowledge you need to improve your skills. Now, here's your planar guide and personal tutor, Sean Penrod.
And we're back. Welcome, everyone, to episode 200 of the MTG Pro Tutor Podcast. Oh, my goodness. Here we are. Thank you so much for joining me today. I cannot believe we are here. It is so exciting. Episode 200. Wow. What a journey. And what better time to have episode 200? We just had a fantastic Pro Tour over the weekend, and we have some huge announcements to say today. So I just can't wait. This is going to be a really exciting episode. We're going a different direction on this one. Instead of bringing on a well-known pro and some really big hotshot, I really want to focus on the community, the Magic community, you who make this show possible. So today's guest is all about community and how to build and foster a healthy Magic community in your area. So before we dive into that, I do want to say that today's episode is brought to you by Paragon City Games, and more about that coming soon. You can go to ParagonCityGames.com and check out what they have going on there. We'll just start with, they are a pillar of Magic community building. Like I said, we'll definitely dive more into that in just a minute here. This episode is also brought to you by you, the listeners, patrons. Thank you so much for supporting the show. MTGPro2.com/Patreon is where you can go to learn more about that. Basically, you can pledge any amount you want per episode and then set a monthly limit so you never go out of budget. And each and every month, I do a giveaway for the patrons only. And I'll be talking more about the changes to the patron exclusive giveaways that will be coming at the end of the episode. So stay tuned if you want to hear more about the changes that are coming down the road for the patrons. Also, towards the end of the interview, we announce a huge giveaway. So I encourage you to stay tuned to the end so you can hear what that is. And more importantly, how to enter. So there you go. A few teasers for you. At the end of the interview, we talk about the giveaway and how you can get involved with that. And then at the end of the episode, we'll talk about the changes to the patron exclusive giveaways. So stay tuned for both those. And the last thing before we dive into the interview, I want to give a huge shout out, a huge congratulations to Jerry Thompson. Oh my gosh. He took down the Pro Tour over the weekend. Congratulations. He is a past guest of the show. Just had him on episode 181. So congratulations to Jerry Thompson, who took down Pro Tour Nashville. That was Amon Kett. So awesome job. Well done. Congratulations. What a great guy. Anyone who's met him just knows that he's a really nice guy, super humble, just really good to talk to. He'll listen. And he's just a fantastic guy to have in the Magic community. Really builds it up. And I can't imagine a better person to win the Pro Tour than Jerry Thompson. So congratulations, Jerry Thompson. Episode 181, if you want to go back and hear his story. All right, so that's the top of the interview stuff. So without further ado, let's dive into episode 200 of the MTG Pro Tutor Podcast with our amazing guest. What's up, everybody? I'm super pumped to have our guest with us today. Our guest is a 25-year-old Magic enthusiast from California, but he's lived everywhere. He's played Magic in both Asia and the USA at the basic LGS level. He's an investor, a partner at Paragon City Games, and generally a loudmouth. Coming to us from Draper, Utah, prodigies near and far, let's welcome the one, the only, Brian Anderson. Brian, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Fantastic. Are you ready to delve into your mind and share with the audience tips and tricks to take the game to the next level?
Hopefully.
Excellent. Now, prodigies out there, if you want to connect with Brian, you can do so online in two ways. He's on Twitter at jbranderson, and he also answers the Paragon City Games Twitter account as well, so you can reach him either way. Now, prodigies, you probably are also thinking, who the heck is this Brian Anderson guy? Well, we are here at episode 200, and we wanted to do something very special. I wanted to highlight the community, because obviously all of these, you know, Magic ancillary stuff wouldn't exist if it wasn't for Magic players. And so while it would have been cool to get some big hotshot name on here or whatever, what I really wanted to do was turn the focus on the community. And so Brian, like we mentioned in the bio, is a partner at Paragon City Games, which is like the best store that I've ever come across in terms of highlighting the community. They do a really good job at highlighting the community and bringing, you know, the community together. And so I'm bringing Brian on to talk about that, and that's why he's here. So Brian, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you. I'm glad to hear that we're living up to your expectations for a community building location.
Yeah, I just love, you know, going down to that store, and it's just really the fact that you put that much emphasis on it is amazing. So before we dive into the Magic stuff, let's dive into a little bit about what you have going on. You know, outside of Magic, you mentioned that you're 25, but you've moved around a lot. So where are you in life?
So I was born in California, Southern California, right outside of Riverside. It's a little city called Wildomar, which not many people know of, but anyone from right around there knows exactly where I'm talking about. My dad was a retail manager, so we moved pretty much anywhere. I've lived in Ohio. Ohio, Wisconsin, Alaska, and I've lived in Utah for about the last 14 years. I went to high school and I went to college here, and I just graduated with my bachelor's in economics from BYU in December.
Perfect, perfect. Excellent. And then as far as family goes, you have that going on?
Yeah, I've got a wife. She's Taiwanese. She just turned 27, and I've got a daughter who is 16 months old.
Nice. So busy guy.
I mean, between business, investments, and my family, I don't have very much time.
Well, we would love to learn about your origin stories as far as magic goes. So take us to the very first time you ever saw or played with magic cards. What was that like for you?
So I was 5 years old. I'm one of the younger players that got into magic. I had a babysitter when we were living in Iowa. And she and her sister were really good friends of our family. And one night they brought over magic cards. And this is 1997. So the sets that are out are like Tempest and Ice Age and Mirage and Visions, and those are the types of cards they're bringing over. So we're playing with like Power Sync and all sorts of cumulative upkeep cards and banding. Like, it was a confusing time to learn how to play Magic.
Wow.
But they sat down and they said, this is how it works. We thought cumulative upkeep, the cumulative counters would actually double the power and toughness of your creatures. So I had this 4/4 flyer that I would pay blue on every upkeep and it would just become more and more powerful.
What?
Wow. And then my brother and I got Portal Second Age starter set. Nice. And it was the classic Bant versus Jund games that we would just go back and forth on. And I very quickly realized that I loved goblins and I loved attacking and I loved green and red and black spells. And so I was the Jund player pretty frequently. Mm. And then my brother and I kind of got off the train for a little while until we moved back to Wisconsin. And then I got sixth edition packs. And that was when it really started going downhill.
Or uphill.
I mean, I own a game store now and I'm having a lot of fun doing it. But
yeah, that's awesome. So what's been your favorite set?
I have a personal affinity for the Odyssey block. So I'm going to say Odyssey is my favorite set.
Why is that?
I love Kamal and Jessica and Balthor, and I just love their story and their interaction and the growth that each of the characters had as they were going through the world of Dominaria. And once the Onslaught block comes and Legions happens, Legions and then Scourge, and the end of Dominaria, I was pretty upset and I was not happy with the changes they were making in 10th edition. So I always just think back to Odyssey and the changes I was making. Well, the changes the characters were making were kind of following suit.
Cool. And along the same lines, was one of your favorite cards?
Kamal Pitfighter.
So for those of us who don't know, what is it? What does it do? And why do you like it?
Kamal Pitfighter is 4/2 red mana. It is a 6/1 haste, legendary creature, barbarian warrior, I believe, that says tap lightning bolt.
That's it? Wow.
Yep.
Nice.
Tap it to lightning bolt stuff. And so I loved it. I would either drop a 6/1 and swing for 6, or I would just be like, lightning bolt you or kill your creature or whatever. And that was my first EDH deck. And then I'm like, nah, I should probably play Niv-Mizzet because the combo is a little bit better.
Well, there you go. That's awesome, man. That is really cool. So yeah, we love learning about you and your background and where you've come. And, obviously you mentioned, and we was talking about in the bio, that now here you are being a partner in a game store, and we would love to kind of dive into that aspect, kind of get behind the scenes and talk about, what it takes to build a community. And we actually have some questions that the Prodigies, popped in and we'll be going over those as well. So kind of starting at the beginning. So there's lots of game stores out there. And so specifically we're talking about Paragon City Games, which is where you are. And that's out there in Draper, really close where I'm at, which is really cool. So how crazy do you have to be, to start a game store, right? Because there's like a whole bunch out there and you have to find the right location. So specifically, what makes you different? Like, why start a game store, and what makes your game store specifically different?
So I've wanted to start a game store for a long time. And one of the reasons I thought was there's a lot of game stores that are focusing, on comic books, or they want to focus on Yu-Gi-Oh or something like that. And I wanted a game store that was really focused on the Magic player and making that the best experience that any Magic player could have coming to F&M or just going to regular tournaments throughout the week, just being able to host the events and formats and have the right kind of players in. And so what happened with Paragon City Games is my partners, Alton and Jason, had actually started this essentially 5 years ago, and they had a similar vision. They wanted a place where heroes could play, where anyone could come and they would feel better than they were at work. And if you're having a bad day somewhere, you can come in and you can have a great time. Hmm. And I came in and I met with Alton and Jason. They were really impressed with me and I was impressed with them, and they asked me to join them as a partner. And so the onus of this store is really on creating a space that's open and clean and friendly, and you can come in after having a bad day or going through a bad week or just generally having a bad year, and you come in here and you can leave it all behind and you can have a space where you know that you're your own hero and you can create your own destiny and things. There's a story. One of our regular patrons just had his grandfather pass away, and he came in, and at the end of the evening, he said, "Thank you for being able to, or for having a space that I could come and take my mind off of things." And so that's why we started the store, so people could have a safe space and a great space to play in.
And I love that. I love that you're very conscious and very methodical and very deliberate about what you wanted. You wanted, you said, a clean place, an open place, a place where people can come and just be lifted up from all the stuff that's going on out in the world or whatever, a safe place. I think that's really cool. And by having those ideals in the forefront of your guys' mind, then that's how you start the culture, and you really have to be conscious about it. So that's really cool. And so you have that, and you find your location, and I really have to touch on this. Like, so Paragon City Games, I mean, we also have Star City Games, which is, only one word difference, and that's a really big, name in the Magic community. So is that by accident, by design? Like, what's going on with the name similarities there?
It's definitely by design. So okay. My partner Alton was the guy who ended up choosing the name. And he is a processes, processes and processes manager and producer and analyst. And so he looks at what the big names are, what we can take, what we can use that people have already made synonymous with Magic the Gathering and great places to play and really good production value. And he's from Orlando. So he has this where he's seen Star City Games do their thing. And so they're SCG, we're PCG. And so we did kind of rip off, rip off a little bit, but we're building our own brand. And so we're where heroes play. We're, designed very much around the hero and the mystic and the sorcerer and imbuing yourself into the culture rather than anything else. There is a funny story about a previous name that we had. Originally, we were going to be called Pendlehaven Games.
Oh, okay.
Because Pendlehaven is the safest place for elves. It's like their stronghold.
Okay.
And so produces images almost of the safe space that we're providing. Paragon is more of the hero in you sort of thing. The greatest city is what we're going for with Paragon City Games.
That's awesome. I do like that. And that's funny that they both start with P. But being deliberate and thoughtful about the name and what it conveys and whatnot. And I love, man, one of the things that impressed me the most, one of the things that impressed me, like when I went in, like on the back of your shirts, for example, it says where heroes play. I thought, hey, that's so cool. The back of my shirt say Hero Among Planeswalkers. So it was like, my people are called Prodigies, your people are called Paragons, and like this whole P thing going on. And so I was really exciting to connect with, a store that also just, again, shared my ideals for the community of really highlighting the player and giving them what they need to succeed. Cause that's what MTG Pro Tutor is all about, is bridging the gap between the players and the pros and helping, our goal is to get 1,000 players to the Pro Tour. And the way that we're doing that is the interviews that we have here, and then also the content and other products that I put out, is really to try and help people do that. And so, but really highlighting them. And so I thought it was so cool that, your store is really, player focused as well. So that's pretty cool.
That's really incredible. Trying to raise people above where they are and get them to the next level. I think that's what everyone wants.
Yeah. And so you have a store, you have the name, we talked about that. And we talked about how you guys were very deliberate and intentional with what you wanted people to experience when you're there. And how do you continue to foster that? How do you foster a community? So you wanted a safe place. Obviously, you need people who are in the store to treat each other, in a way that is welcoming for other players. And so, how do you do that? You just kind of, after you develop this culture, you just kind of attract people who are like that? Or do you have you have to monitor players or fix their behavior? Like, what's it like actually building a community?
It's really interesting. Yeah. So a lot of it is attracting the right kinds of players. So you find community icons, and you find the people who are big names, who have been around the game, previous store owners, people that are just generally good about it and are willing to be first adopters and come in and test the space out. And you imbue in them the sense that you want for the space. And as new people are coming in, I mean, it's almost self-policing. We have one guy who comes in very regularly who is able. Sorry, I lost my train of thought. He comes in very regularly, and he's able to leave his phone and his bag. And he's one of the collectors that has a vintage collection. So generally when he's carrying trades around with him, you know, it's $3,000 or $4,000 or $5,000. And he can leave those things around and know that no one's going to pick it up and walk out, and know that our staff is looking out for it. Mm. And generally one of the owners is in the shop at all times. So we are working directly with our community to hear the feedback. And if anything ever comes up, we're there immediately saying, hey, what can we do? Let's separate you guys. Let's make this work. Like, you know, we encourage judge calls, and we encourage people to always be asking us, or always be asking and telling us what can go better here. What's the best interaction that we can have? So it's very much a hands-on thing. You know, you're spending 5, 6, 7 hours a week of just being with your community and playing games and sitting down and doing those sorts of things and talking with people on their level, and not, you know, talking down, not saying, oh, I'm better than you, I have this and this and this. It's learning from everyone who comes in and allowing them to express the hero inside of them almost.
Awesome. And I'm going to try and go through these in a logical order, but if I, you know, jump around and miss some, then that's on me. So some of the questions that we have here from Dylan Tracy, for example, he says, when you're starting a storefront, how do you do that with the, like, do you start out with a plethora of singles ready to go? Do you kind of build it on the way? So when you're first starting out a store, what's that like? Like, how does that singles collection like play in? And I know I thought that too. You know, I walk into a store and I think, you know, they have all these singles, got it. But when they first started, it's just like owners all just throw in their singles, or so what was that like?
There's a portion of it. So initially Alton and Travis brought their singles in and kind of dumped them into the pot. Travis had about a $15,000 collection that included singles that went all the way back to beta. So we have portions of a common set of beta. We've got a full set of the dark. We've got, you know, Weatherlight and everything on up. And it's just finding a large enough collection. Like, you want to start somewhere between $10,000 and $15,000 that has a good depth of commons and uncommons, so you can be selling those, but also has the rares and some of the more chase cards, so that you can be selling them, so people feel like you have everything in stock. Now, with that, if you're doing your turnaround fast enough on your Magic cards, you should be seeing them move just about every quarter. So you have to be actively looking for new cards. You're opening packs of the newest sets. As people are bringing in collections, you pretty much need to just be putting down cash on all these things. So you need to be liquid enough where you can say, hey, here's a $5,000 collection that comes in. It's filling in all these gaps that I need, and picking it up as you can. Now, if you're a smaller store, or you're in a smaller area, or you don't have as much space for these singles, you can start with a little lower stuff, but you want to find something that people can almost come in and build a deck directly out of your inventory and still be able to sell singles. So that's the most important thing when you're opening your store.
Interesting. Along the same lines, so Andrew Talcott, he says, does a store buy in bulk? And if so, do people find you, or do you go out looking for them? So how does bulk buys go when it comes to a store's collection?
As far as that goes, it's a give and take. So we have a buyer, a professional buyer who's been in the industry for about 9 years now, who has a wealth of connections. And people say, oh, I'm getting ready to move this, or oh, I saw this thing come up, or he's also an admin of the high-end group. So when a big collection goes up and someone's asking a certain price, he can go back and say, hey, this is what we're looking to pick up. I'll buy these things at this price. I'll buy most of your bulk of other things. But yeah, a lot of times you're going to just have to buy large swaths at a time and not being able to pick up individual pieces.
And then you just kind of sort it afterwards, or do you sort? Oh, do you kind of go through the bulk beforehand and then kind of give a price?
Yeah, so you go through the bulk a little bit. I mean, generally, anyone that's going to be dropping anything above $5,000 in a collection has a pretty good idea on what's in there, and they'll let you know because everyone wants. The most interesting thing in buying and selling Magic singles is everyone wants to sell high and buy low, which is not very good if you're the guy in the middle.
Yeah.
But there's been a lot of work with this. So Channel Fireball and Card Kingdom and Star City Games are all doing a very good job of kind of setting the expectations of this is what buy prices look like, and this is what sell prices look like. And you know, we need to be here in the middle making just enough to keep the store running so that you guys can have a great space.
Yeah. All right. So you started up a shop. You got your initial card collection through buying and selling and input from founders, sounds like. Now, how do you increase your customer base? This comes from Jack Graves. How do you grow your – how do you get the word out there? How do you increase your customer base, especially when players might find excitement at a shop that's 50 miles away? Sounds like that might be close to home for him. I don't know if Jack is a store owner, but yeah, you know, how do you grow it when there's other stores that people are already used to driving, you know, long distances for?
So here, I mean, this is a very interesting one for us. We're sitting in an area. If I had potentially a very good sniper rifle or a missile, I could probably hit some of the stores. But a lot of the stores near us, we've got stores within 3, 4, 5, 6 miles, and there's about 6 stores in a 6 mile radius on us. And so it was a struggle for us in the beginning. When we first opened our doors, there were many days where we would have the lights on and employees in the shop and nothing for anyone to do except sort cards and twiddle your thumbs and play a couple games when you got bored of everything else. But the best way to do it is you want at least one of your employers or your owners to be a very active person in their community, whatever it is that they do. So if they're a very active modern player, a very big drafter or something like that,
okay,
you want to have them playing in those communities and reaching out and finding other people who are like-minded and saying, hey, we should try and play at this store. That's what we really did to boost our community. We went from almost having nothing happening, no Friday Night Magics and anything last year, to in December having 30 people at our F&Ms, January having 45, and now we have 60 plus people at our Friday nights, and we have 30 people at our legacy events. And that's because I, as a legacy player, was in the legacy community and said, hey, the store that we're at isn't really meeting our needs. And this is before I became an owner, but the store isn't really meeting our needs. I'm really impressed with Paragon City Games. Why don't we go and try it out? I had a couple of friends in the community who were drivers, and they said, yeah, why don't we try it out once and see if everyone likes it? Everyone came 1 week. We had about 11 people show up. We played Legacy, loved it. Paragon really loved that I was doing that. And then we said, what can we do to make this experience better? And me talking to Paragon on the outside at that time, I said, you know, we should be streaming this and stuff. And so in January, we started streaming the events. And so we've got Tuesday and Friday Night Legacy that we're streaming. And we're reaching out and we're providing a metagame analysis. And we're always talking in our forums and our community. And it's just, you need to be really active and really out there and engaging people where they want to be engaged at. Like a lot of times you'll see stores reach out and say, hey, you need to come and do this. Or, hey, we've got this great sale or whatever. And sometimes it's just, if you're the one that they have a connection with and you're providing a good time, they're going to come in and try the product and love it. And so if you have a store that rocks and you have a personality that rocks and you're willing to go out and spend time playing to bring people in, that's the easiest way to build a customer base.
Interesting. So going out, like you said, to events in other locations and then basically talking up your location when you do that.
Yeah. I mean, you have to be careful and you have to not step on their toes while you're there, but you can say, and I did some of this outside on Facebook and said, hey, why don't we try out Paragon City?
Got it.
Yeah, you offer suggestions and you allow the other people to make the decisions.
Yeah, that's really neat. And this kind of ties into BT Gilligan. He asked, you know, how do they build a following and store loyalty? And so kind of what I pull out of the story that you just shared was like when you guys went to do that legacy event, then you said you were talking to the store and the store was talking to you guys afterwards saying, how can we make this better? So it takes that communication, the store, you know, the personnel, the personalities, like you said, of the store reaching out to those players, those few that are coming in and saying, hey, how can we make this better? And really just being dialed into what the players, you know, want and need and providing that. And that's how you build, you know, loyalty and a following. Is that right?
Yeah. I mean, it's very much like what some of the pros that you've had on here say. They say, always be open, always be listening and asking questions. Someone is going to offer a piece of advice that you've never thought of, or a line of play that you've never thought of. And it's the same with store building. There are community members that have had pain points and said, what if the store did this? And if you're the store that says, hey, what can we do to eliminate this pain point? And they're like, well, you can do this and this and this. You're going to get it right. And you're going to build that following and people will be loyal because you're listening to them.
Awesome, man. That's awesome. Now, kind of from the other side, from like the player side, I know that I've had several of these questions about more of the back end stuff of, you know, stores and business. Kind of going back to, looks like another thing that, you know, Andrew Talcott, he said, how do you speculate on how many boxes to buy before a set is released? So, like, how does that, so first of all, I'm unfamiliar with it. Does every store get the same amount, or do you actually say, hey, I want this many boxes? And if that's the case, how do you decide how many boxes you're going to get?
So with everything, Wizards of the Coast sets certain allocations and limits based on how many people you're getting in normally. So we're an Advanced Plus location, which means we have the highest allocations. Our pre-release kits are usually 100-plus kits. Our initial order on sets is in the range of 18 to 20 cases on just our initial, you know, the first weekend release, and then it stays really high after that. So the way that we kind of decide is we each look at the set, each of us individually, because most of us are Magic players, and we say, would I love to play this set? Would I draft this set? Would I be buying cards out of it? What's the value of packs? And we go and do that. We set aside, we say, okay, if we want people to be playing standard opening weekend, we need to open, you know, so many cases of product in order to have the singles for them to play standard.
Okay.
Well, if we're opening this many cases for them to have singles to play standard, we need this many cases for our release events and our drafts and sealed PPTQ that we have coming up next weekend. And so that's how we make our ordering decisions. But usually, if the set's good, you're just going to max it. If the set's mediocre, you'll probably still max it because you can hold on to that product for the next couple of weeks. Mm-hmm. Just means you don't have to reorder as fast. If the set is just awful, it's something that no one wants to touch with a 39.5-foot pole. It's literally green and fuzzy and it's walking towards you. Then you may half your allocation, and you may bring in, you know, 5 or 6 cases compared to like 15 or 20 cases where you say, hey, let's see what people think. You know, you're still going to try. There's always a possibility. And there's, you know, if you're doing it right, you have an outlet valve. You can either dump it on eBay or you can put it on TCG Player. Or you've got someone in the community who just likes collecting boxes and picking them up from you. And so if it goes poorly, even at 5 or 6 cases, you have somewhere to go with it. And you're always going to want singles. There's always going to be something in each set that's worth having the single of. And so it's worth it to open some of the product as well. So
all right, cool. Oh,
that's usually how we do it.
Oh, that's fascinating. Yeah. And when it comes to the store, what brings in the most income? Is it running tournaments? Is it selling those singles? Is it selling boxes? And again, another great question for Andrew, because I'm always very fascinated with this. How do stores stay afloat? Like, what's really the, you know, the high impact, the high ticket? What's the game plan for you guys?
So for us and most, you know, most of the GPs that you go to, a lot of the events are break even or just slightly, you know, they keep the lights on and they keep the employees paid, but they're not making the store very much money. Tournaments are almost, they're a loss leader. They're what bring players in and keep them playing the game, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then sealed products. So if you buy a sealed box, our cost is so high that it makes it so we don't want to sell to anyone but our local players. And the best way to sell those is in individual packs. So if you buy a sealed box from us, that's also a very low margin.
Interesting.
If you're buying, you know, three to six packs every couple of days, that is the best place for us to make margins. But even then, the best thing that you can be doing is be buying our accessories. So the deck boxes, the sleeves, the dice, stickers that we might have, or other materials that we have that we give away with our things, the concessions that we have, like sodas and drinks and chips and, you know, whatever food we've got in store. Those are our highest margin things.
Wow.
They allow us to keep us in business. Now, singles, you know, can be a 50-50. Sometimes we buy it at a really good price and they shoot up. Sometimes we buy it at a really high price and they go down. But on average, you know, we're making somewhere between 40 and 50%. Usually that's about what the buy price range is.
Wow, that's fascinating to me because, I mean, I've been to many stores that don't have – like Paragon City Games has – you guys have your own accessories. Like you have nice deck boxes and dice and all this stuff. I've been to plenty of stores that they don't have their own accessories. They, you know, they have, you know, dragon sleeves or dragon shields and all this other stuff. Are the margins on those so good? Because I doubt every single store in the U.S. is selling enough chips to keep them up, you know? So like, I'm very interested to learn about this.
It's very much, if you have high velocity on your singles and you're turning them over every month and you're doing high value items, you can usually get by just off those things. But you're really not making the dollars you want to make off of your sealed product or your tournaments.
Wow, that's incredible. You just mentioned turnover. Sam Brill, how many inventory turns do they plan/need on Magic Singles?
So a good number for our store, and we're one of the bigger for single sales in the area, we want to see between 6 and 10 turns in a year, which comes out to about 1.5 per quarter. Now, it's not going to be a full turn. This is on the high ticket items. We're going to, you know, we're going to have a backlog of commons and uncommons and random things that just won't move. And a lot of those things, they're very good donation fodder. So you can give them, we can give them to local charities and hospitals and libraries and schools that have a club or have something that they can use them for. Mm-hmm. One, it allows us to free up inventory space and we can write it off as a certain amount of items like that. But that's the speed that we want to be turning. We want to see something going, you know, something comes in within a month and a half, it's back out the door and someone else has it. And we've got something new in that spot.
Hmm. Interesting. And then as an owner, how much time are you expected to take or, you know, to play the games, to interact with the community, to build decks, stuff like that? Because, I mean, there's obviously a balance because it would be cool to, you know, sit down and play Magic all day long and, you know, build decks and play all the games so you can give a valid, you know, recommendation. But also there's a store to run. So what's that balance like as an owner?
So for me personally, it's pretty rough. I have 2 nights a week that I'm really open to play Magic. And my Tuesdays I spend casting Legacy, which I love, and I would not give up to play the game because I think it's very valuable to think the way that other players should be thinking about their matches as they're playing them. And then on Fridays, you know, I have about 3 hours, and then I take 1 week or 1 night a week to play Netrunner, which is just it's another attack and defense style card game. Mm-hmm. Where I can kind of like hone my skills. But, you know, it ends up being that I spend 9 or 10 hours a week outside of store management and operations responsibilities playing games.
Interesting. And that's you found that to be enough for when somebody comes in and they're asking about, you know, games, stuff like that, that you're able to give a good recommendation?
I definitely think that's on the low end. I'm not able to give very good recommendations on most things. I can keep up with some deck building and stuff like that. But as far as Legacy goes, I have a pretty good handle on it. So I think if you want to be just specialized in one thing, that's enough time. But if you need to specialize or you're the advice guru, you need to spend a lot more time deck building. And it's, you know, 2 to 3 hours a day that you're spending on deck builds and looking at the current metagame and reading articles and things like that.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, that's cool. I mean, I love, you know, learning about this behind the scenes, you know, store stuff, and might touch on that a little bit more moving forward, of course. But also, I also wanted to learn about you and some of the perspectives that you've had, you know, coming through as a Magic player, and then your observations, especially commentating on events. I think that would be pretty cool. So, first of all, kind of going back, what are some of the events that you've, you know, played at, had experience on as far as a Magic player goes?
So I've been playing, I mean, obviously since the mid 90s, but I was playing competitively in the early 2000s, and let's see, about 11 years ago or so in the JSS, I was a little bit of a thing locally where I had qualified for a championship and couldn't go out, but I was a JSS player and I was, this is my other favorite card, is Jukai Messenger. It's a green for a Forest Walk 1/1 creature monk. and that's what I used to take me, you know, to secure my spot at the championship there and earn a small scholarship. But that's where I really started my local tournament success. And then I've played in PTQs and PPTQs and things like that. And I generally will either just miss the top eight or get into the top eight and allow someone else to have the invite or something like that. I would love to be on the Pro Tour and things like that. But I've focused on letting other people have the opportunities because I feel like I have enough time to do it later in life.
Cool. Very cool. That's interesting that's cool that you played on the JSS, the Junior
Super Series.
Super Series back when it was around. Like that's,
yep.
That's pretty cool. How far did you get with that?
So I was invited to the championship, and I believe 11 years ago, 2006, 2007 wow. championship. Cool. It was when Slith Firewalker and Royal Assassin were the promos.
Very cool. Very cool. And now as far as commenting, some of the things I want to touch on are, what does it take to be an effective commentator of, you know, of Magic, of an esport, you know, because it's very easy for people to, you know, criticize the people on the Grand Prix or the coverage team or SCG or whoever. But this being our opportunity to talk to somebody who is actually behind the camera and on the mic, watching the people's plays, keeping them, you know, keeping viewers up to date. What is that like? What does it take to actually, you know, comment?
So it's very similar to Magic. You really need to know your role, right? If you're the aggro player or if you're the control player. And that kind of boils down in commentary where one of us is the play-by-play and the other one's the color commentator. And you'll notice this with Cedric Phillips and Pat Sullivan, where you have one of them that is going play, you know, moment by moment, saying what's going on the field and just doing very small introductions into maybe what the next line might be or things like that, where you have the color commentator is saying, oh, this line makes a lot of sense. So this would be really interesting to see. They're the one that usually has the jokes and stuff. That's the LSV character. Whereas the Marshall Sutcliffe is very much what I do. I'm a play-by-play where I say, this is what's happening next. This is what we're doing. Oh, we're shuffling up. Oh, we're doing this. And I just make sure that there's a constant stream of vocal action so that my color commentator can come in and be the really smart one, and I can set them up to do those sorts of things. So you just need to know your role. If you're a control player, you might be better as the color commentary because you can come in and come up with really witty things and lines like that. And if you're an aggro player, you can say, hey, you know, I just need to turn my card sideways. I just need to say what's going on all the time. And so that's kind of how it boils down as far as being a decent commentator. Now, to be great, you want to fill that role even better. So you're going and you're watching other commentators and you're watching lots of matches of Magic and you're going through in your head, oh, what would I be talking about here? Writing ideas down. And then whenever anyone gives you a critique and says, hey, you could do this better, or I couldn't hear you, or, you know, this is how this line should have gone, you include that in your next commentary and you immediately are taking those changes and using them.
That's good. That is really good. Now, we talked about, you know, growing a physical location of the store. What are some of the challenges that you face with growing viewers on a stream? Because you said that you regularly stream, and we're going to dive into that. but what does it take to grow that? Like, how many viewers you guys have? And obviously, it probably doesn't matter how much you have now. I know you probably want more. So what's that like? How do you grow online viewers?
So a lot of it, I mean, there's several pieces. One of the easiest pieces is reaching out and finding other members in a similar niche of the community. Like, we're almost exclusively doing legacy content right now. So whenever we stream, it's a legacy thing. And we have people like Bay Area Eternal and I can't remember the other names, but other people who are hosting us that as soon as we go live, they go live and they send it out to all their followers. And so now we're getting two or three times the number of followers that we would normally have seen or have seeing it to see it. And so that's how you start. You reach out. Now, once you've reached out to everyone and gotten them in, you want to keep them in. So you got to have good visuals, and you got to make sure that you're taking care of your lighting so people can see the field, and so that you're providing content that matters to people. You're doing timely commentary, and you're talking about things going on in the community, and you're not, you know, going back and forth all the time, so that you have a match of Magic going on. And then when you move to commercials, you move very smoothly, but you don't leave it on for very long because that way you lose viewers and stuff. And then the next step is really, you know, looking at why other people are watching other streams. Right. So on Tuesday nights, we've had to deal with the VSL being on, and we've had to deal with TCG player tournaments, and we've had to deal with Caleb Durward and Original Estrus, Aaron Campbell, who I'm a huge fan of, all being on and playing, some of them playing Eternal formats, and us saying, okay, well, we have this physical event on this night, and this is when we can stream and cast and do all these things. So we're just going to offer the very best we can. Offer good commentary, and then have a backup where we've got the metagame coming out so people can watch the games being played and then see what decks are being played. So that's how we've built our streaming up. And we have usually we peak right around 43 or so viewers, and we're trying to double and triple that. But this last week we were in the top four of streams on Magic the Gathering from Tuesday night.
Nice. Now that's fascinating. So as you have observed, you know, games as both as a player and then as a commentator, let's dive in to some, you know, crunchy tactics, I guess. What's the biggest mistake that you've seen players make? And then, in your opinion, how can we avoid that mistake?
A lot of times, I mean, the biggest one where I'm critical of is when people don't have enough experience with their deck. And it's where they've kind of net decked something and they haven't really sat down and gone through the lines, or they haven't taken it through its paces on Magic Online, or they haven't sat down with someone who knows the deck and says, hey, what do I need to know? What do I do here? And they'll just make funny mistakes on camera where they'll, during the Miracles era, where they'll forget a counterbalance trigger, or where they will make a really weird sideboarding decision that actually costs them the game, or where they'll have a line in their hand that could win the game, but they just don't take it because they haven't seen it enough times and they get kind of walled in. So one of the biggest mistakes you can make is not asking enough questions and not knowing your deck well enough. Now, besides that, other mistakes that I've seen, I mean, you have people that just make funny blocks, or they think that a card works one way and I've never asked to figure out if it works a different way. Yeah. Or they will, there are people that have a mentality of, I'm going to game this system. And when you've got a camera going over your head and you've got people back there commentating and coming in another room and saying, hey, you should do this, or you're doing this wrong, or fixing mistakes that, you know, fixing your mechanical errors, like, you shouldn't be trying to game the system, because both the commentators and the viewers will know. And now there's a permanent record of you being less than on top of it. So that's another mistake you can make.
Yeah, oh my gosh. So on the topic of not knowing your deck well enough, you said one of the things that you can do is ask a lot of questions. Who do you ask? How do you get that knowledge?
So the easiest place to start is you kind of ask the internet. You Google things on your deck, and you watch deck techs, and you do things like that. Now, if you've got a good local community and you've got guys that you can turn to who have played the decks, a lot of them are willing to help you out and sit down. A lot of people love to talk, right? They want to offer their advice and their expertise because it makes them feel better about themselves, specifically because they have something to offer, right? Yeah. Now, the next thing you can do is there's always places to reach out. So I'm a part of MTG Pro Tour, and I love watching people with their decks, and I'm a part of all these Facebook groups. There is all sorts of pros on Twitter that you can say, hey, I'm working on this deck, do you have any advice on it? Mm-hmm. And a lot of them will reach back out. There's also a lot of paid coaching that you can go and look for, like the MTG Mastermind or Team Metagame Gurus and things, where they offer paid coaching and you can get specific advice from people who have played on the Pro Tour and are playing these decks. And, I mean, you've got your deck building masterclass that has very good advice on things like this, and it'll be updated with specific decks, but there's a wealth of resources. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's so true. You know, you have your local legends, the experts there, and then obviously the endless amounts of opinions that you can get on the internet. Those are all, you know, great resources. So what have you learned from Magic that you've been able to apply to other areas of your life?
This is a tough one. One of the biggest things I've learned is patience. A lot of times you want the events and the results right then and there, right? You walk into a tournament and you say, I'm going to win it today. And it's good to have that attitude, and you shouldn't take that away from yourself. But a lot of times you have to realize that sometimes it's just not this day. And sometimes it is, and you have to be happy for both of those. But just be patient with both you and your abilities, the amount of money that you can be spending to build your decks, the people that you can be reaching out to, the types of tournaments that you can take down consistently. Like, just, you know, it will come. You will be that good one day. Just put in the time every day right now, and you'll make it.
Well, I understand that it will come. It might not be right now, but as long as you put in the time, like you said, that success that you're striving for, you know, will come. You get your skill up to a certain level, and then it's basically a numbers game after that. You just keep, yep, you be consistent, go to events, and, you know, so think of it this way, like, if it's going to take you 50 events to do well, if you do, you know, one a week, that's going to be a year. And if you do, you know, two a week, then half a year, you know, so, yeah. But the more time you're able to put in, whether that's online or in person or a combination of both, again, once you get your skill to a certain level, and that's what I've seen with doing so many interviews is players, once they get their skill to a certain level, then they just know it's just a matter of time. They just keep going to GPs until they finally get that top eight. So yeah, yep, that's really cool. Now, have you been able to take, well, let's see, anything from being a store owner? Are there different lessons that you've learned there that you've been able to apply into your Magic game?
Yeah. One of the big ones is, I, as an aggro, you know, an original aggro player, moving into control and combo and things like that, it's understanding that, you know, I don't need this thing right now. Like, I don't need to take this action. I don't need to force something on my opponent right now. Like, I don't need the brainstorm at the end of the turn, or I don't need to get in for this extra 2 points of damage here, because my end game doesn't look like that. And so it's kind of been the same with my store. It's where, oh, I don't need to pick up, you know, this product right now, or I don't need to really worry about getting this thing because I'm more focused on this result to bump my bottom line rather than that result. So,
and on the topic of, you know, the community and highlighting them, Do you have an example? Have you been able to observe somebody who has kind of been on a journey, or maybe pick and choose stories from different players that you have seen grow and improve? And what does it take to, you know, to move from just like, you know, a local one store player to kind of up the ranks?
Going from FNM to PPTQ.
What's that journey like from your perspective?
I mean, from my perspective, I was always kind of based out of one store, and I would travel for like the Modern States and things like that. And it's just kind of the confidence that you get, right? After a point of winning so many Friday Night Magic drafts, you know, you start saying, hey, I could do this with Constructed as well. And you go and you take a third place at a States, and then you go to a GP and you miss day two almost every time you go. And all of a sudden you break it to day two. And it's just kind of that confidence that, you know, after a few wins, you should reach out and try the next level because you're probably good enough. Other people that I've seen do things like this, like there's a kid, and he's not a product of our store necessarily, but we've definitely been happy to have him as one of our players, who started out playing with his friends locally and, you know, just doing the at school and after school and stuff. And he started reading articles and just getting really into it, and got MTGO and started playing every single draft he could online. And now he's consistently day toing GPs. He's been on the pro tour, and, you know, he cashes almost every GP he goes to. And it's just cause he was willing to say, hey, I'm interested in this. What are the best people doing? Oh, they're getting on MTGO and they're testing with the new format. I can do that with limited, you know, go to your pre-release, figure it out, go to your PPTQ, go to your RPTQ and go from there. And it's, you know, if you have the time and the skill, it's a lot easier. But if you just have the time, it's the same thing. You'll get there eventually.
That's awesome. And when you are running long, like all day type tournaments, have you noticed anything that sets apart the people who do well, you know, playing Magic all day long versus those who, you know, fizzle out and don't make it, I guess? Like what have been your observations for as far as tournament day tips?
Yeah. So, I mean, there's like an anger level, right? You see people in the early rounds, they go 0-2 and they go out in a huff. And sometimes it's good to get yourself, you know, extricate yourself from bad situations. But a lot of times, instead of saying, oh, my pool was bad, or I played this and this person's a terrible person, you have to go back and you say, oh, I missed this thing, or I could have built my deck this way and things like that. And you need to really get critical evaluation from other people. Now, the people that are going long and making top eights, they have some pretty consistent things about them. A lot of them are brewers. They're able to go and look through the metagame and say, oh, this thing would make sense here. Or they're bringing in new sideboards each time. Or they have a lot of fun with the deck that they're playing. So you got to pick a deck that makes it fun for you. Or you got to build, you know, out of your sealed pool, whatever, a deck that will make it fun for you. Or you've got to build a deck that you just turn creatures sideways, so you don't have to spend a lot of your emotional capital, right? Hmm. And then a lot of them are either getting, you know, a Powerade or a water or something throughout the day to keep their mental juices flowing. You know, you've got to have something in your body to keep you going. A lot of them are walking in after they've had breakfast at Subway, which is right next to us, or another place. And they have that good start. They sit down and they're not expecting to lose, but they're also not dead set on they must win. And they just keep going and they play round after round and they turn it in, and they're very gracious generally with their opponents. And they're willing to help those people who went 0-2, but really want to figure out how to make their deck better the next time. So usually it's that type of person that's making the most leeway in our PPTQs and GPTs and such.
And those are some really good observations. So they're taking care of themselves. You said they've had breakfast and they keep fuel in their body throughout the day. You said, and one thing that you said they're mostly brewers. And that's really interesting to me. So it's people who, like you said, are actively thinking about Magic. I love how you said they come to events with a different sideboard every time because they're trying different things out. I think that was really eye opening for me, is, you know, those people who are really invested in the game and taking the time to think for themselves. You know, they're obviously looking online, getting ideas, but then you also have to apply your own brain power to it and really try and, you know, figure things out and test things out. And you probably get it wrong, but you're not going to find the right thing unless you find the wrong things, you know? And so, you definitely have to make those, and you make those decisions and show up to an event and try it out and get the feedback. And then, you do that at smaller events, and then when you go to a PPTQ, you've had that many iterations of the process underneath your belt, and you're able to be that much more prepared. I think that was a really good insight. I like that. That's cool.
Yeah.
That was really cool. So, man, this has been like an awesome conversation. I've really enjoyed just kind of getting behind the scenes on a store and, you know, community and what it takes to build one. Because I know most of my experience has been on the online community, obviously, you know, so with the podcast and the group and it's, you know, totally different getting people to come to a physical location and having people come to your group or whatever. But it's just really neat. And I love, you know, putting the players first and you know, what do they need and talking with them and figuring out, you know, how, you know, we as providers of this, you know, magic experience can make their experience that much better. And it's been great. And one really cool thing is we've talked a little bit about our alignment, just how much MTG Pro Tutor and Paragon City is so aligned with the community. And so that's why I am super pumped and super excited to announce that Paragon City Games is actually going to be a proud sponsor of the MTG Pro Tutor podcast. And I think that's an awesome connection. And what does that mean moving forward? So everybody listening, what that means is that I'm going to be obviously thanking Paragon City pretty much on every episode for their support and encouraging you guys to go, you guys and girls to go check out what they have going on, because they have, you know, a lot of good things, not just for the local community, but for the Magic community at large. And also, starting, you know, today, we'll be able to hold, you know, regular giveaways here on the show. And so to commemorate episode 200 and to kick off the sponsorship of Paragon City and MTG Pro Tutor, we are actually going to be giving away a Modern Masters 2017 booster box, the whole dang box, the whole thing, just for you. Anybody who wants to can go to mtgpro2.com/. What do we say? Giveaway 200? We're going to do
giveaway 200.
/ giveaway 200 is the URL. And that's where you can go to sign up for this booster box. And there's no real criteria other than you just go there. You have to answer like one super easy question and then put in your email address and you're good to go. You'll be entered into the drawing. And we're going to be able to do, you know, more fun stuff like that moving forward, because Paragon City and MTG Pro Tutor, we've talked about, we're just so much aligned that we're really excited to partner up and build the community. That's what we really want to do. We want to get the word out on their channel, on our channel, that, you know, the Magic community is a great place to be. The players are amazing, and we really want to give back and highlight and foster, you know, good participation wherever you are in the world. And so thank you. Yeah, thank you so much for doing that and enhancing the Prodigy community by sponsoring the show and providing some cool product for us.
Welcome. I'm glad that it's worked out so well. I mean, we've had a couple of pitfalls as we've been trying to get connected, but I'm glad that this is all as timely as it is to be able to give away what we're able to give away.
Yeah. And I'm really excited to, you know, explore more of what this means moving forward. Like we mentioned before, and I've seen them, like Paragon has some really cool accessories, like really nice deck boxes and stickers and sleeves and stuff like that. So, some of the giveaways will, you know, be, you know, those kinds of things in addition to, you know, obviously relevant, Magic product. And we talked about doing fun things. Like if a guest mentions a cool card is one of their favorites, we can do like a play set of those. And so we'll explore what some of the giveaways will be, but we're just definitely excited to, you know, be more active in, you know, fostering just that fun, you know, aspect of the collectible aspect of a collectible card game. Everyone who plays Magic to some degree, I think, likes they like opening the cards, they like collecting some aspect of it. And so it's just really fun to be able to have a resource that we're able to tap into. And so I really appreciate, you know, your efforts as a community builder and both locally with actual players and then reaching out to content creators to really spread the love and spread the word. So thank you so much for that again.
Thank you.
So let's see, as we wrap things up, Prodigies, I want to remind you that if you want to connect directly with Brian, you can do so on Twitter at JBranderson. So it's actually JBR Anderson, excuse me. But anyways, it's JBranderson, you can look him up there. But he also answers the Paragon City Twitter as well. So you can look them up and connect with them, see what they have going on. And check out their streams on Tuesday nights. They said that they do the Legacy streams. And that I think is really cool. I didn't really touch on it as much, but it's actually one of the biggest regular Legacy events held in the country. Is that right?
Yeah. We're hitting, on average, 30 people per Tuesday and about 24 on Fridays. So we have a very consistent large group that comes out and plays here.
That's awesome.
In Podunk, Utah.
Yeah, I mean, that's so cool. So twice a week, you have a very large Legacy contingency that's showing up. And it actually shifts the meta. I remember you telling me that based on your guys's results because you do it so regularly and so many people, when you put your results up online, like that's the results that people see. Like when people are net decking Legacy, like they're going and they're seeing your guys' deck list. And so it's really cool that the whole country, the whole, you know, Legacy scene in Magic, in large part is impacted by what you guys are doing right here in Utah. So that is really, really cool. So go check that out, Prodigies. You can, Tuesday nights, and that's on Twitch, right? You guys have your stream on Twitch?
Yep.
Cool.
Twitch.tv/ParagonCityGames.
There you go. So look them over your, you know, Legacy player, and then check out ParagonCityGames.com for the other things that they have going on over there. And Brian, what is one last parting piece of guidance you have for us? Either something you already said you want to emphasize, or something new you want to leave us here at the end?
I mean, the first thing is if you have foil food chains, I still need them to finish my deck.
Love it. All right. There you go.
But the other thing is just have patience with yourself, with your community, with your store. If there's someone that's giving you an issue, if there's, you know, a part of your play that you're always worried about or whatever, just have patience. Like, it'll come. Rome wasn't built in a day. That's the common phrase that people say. But it really wasn't. You know, your Magic play wasn't built in a day. LSV wasn't made in a day. Randy Bueller and Brian Weissman, you know, and anyone. None of them were built in a day, and a lot of them have these experiences where they were going from F&M to this, to that, to this, and finally making it. So just be patient. You'll get there.
Well, Brian, I want to acknowledge you for your contributions to the multiverse. And thank you so much for your time, for sharing your experiences, and giving us a sneak peek in the back end of a store that's been amazing. You truly are a hero among planeswalkers, and it's been a blast chatting with you. May you never be mana screwed. Always draw what you need and depart every plane victorious.
Thank you.
Boom, baby. Thank you so much, Brian, again, for coming on to the show. Really appreciate you taking the time to peel back the curtain and really show us what it's like to run a store, the back end stuff, and more importantly, what it takes to build and foster a healthy Magic community. Prodigies out there, this show was about the community because I love the Magic community. I love you guys and girls. Thank you so much for listening, for supporting the show. It really means a lot to me. Obviously, Magic content wouldn't exist if it weren't for amazing people like you who consume it, who want to get better at Magic, who want to play, who want to learn, who want to grow, who want to connect with these awesome players. That's why this show in particular exists, to bridge the gap between you and the pros so we can really learn what they're doing that we're not and up our game. MTG Pro Tutor is all about sending 1,000 players to the Pro Tour. I'm still looking forward for that first listener turn guest, and it's going to be amazing as we just see those numbers roll in as people start learning, improving, and growing. And the community is where it's all at. I love our Facebook group where people are asking questions and learning and helping each other out. And it's just so awesome to see the interaction. I love getting in there and knowing that I don't have to answer every question because you answer them for each other, that you are such a great support network for each other. And that's what it's all about. This community of happy, helpful, uplifting people. And that's why I really wanted to bring on Brian today and talk about what that's like, because I love the Paragon City Games store. They are really good at just having a good atmosphere, and the players there help each other, and the community that they are building is absolutely fantastic. And I wanted to highlight that and bring that to you. And that's why, as I mentioned on the show, Paragon City Games is the proud sponsor of MTG Pro Tutor. So moving forward, as we mentioned, they're going to be helping us with giveaways. Things like the episode 200 giveaway that we're doing right now. Go to mtgprotutor.com/giveaway200. That's the URL. /giveaway200. All you have to do is enter your email address. Well, all you have to do is answer a very easy question and then put in your email address. And then every person that you invite, you get some more entries for that. So it's just a really easy, low impact way that we want to give back. So if you want to get entered into winning a Modern Masters 2017 booster box, the whole dang thing, go to mtgprotutor.com/giveaway200. Also, the patron exclusive giveaways are going to get an upgrade. That's right, patrons. Thank you so much for sticking with me, for your support, for all that you have done for the show. And I'm really excited with the help and support of Paragon City Games. The giveaways each and every month will become a little bit better. I'm hoping to give away a little bit more stuff, or at least a little bigger stuff. So that's really exciting. And I'm very grateful to Paragon City Games for their support. So, of course, the show notes for today's episode, I almost forgot to mention, can be found at mtgpro2.com/Brian Anderson. So you can go look him up there, touch back on the things that we talked about, and links to any resources that were mentioned, including Paragon City Games and the episode 200 giveaway. Man, that's really it for this amazing episode 200. Thank you so much. I don't think I can say that enough. I really appreciate this journey that I've been on and that you have been with me. I love being in your ears twice a week and learning from these great players and then connecting them with you. It's been amazing. I definitely look forward to more face-to-face interactions with all you amazing prodigies. I love our online Facebook group and all the discussion that goes on there, but I definitely want to get out to more Grand Prix, for example, and meet people face-to-face and sit down and talk and play Magic. That's like the best part, right? I love the community, as this episode highlights, and that community is you. What you do matters in Magic, and I really am glad that you are a prodigy and that you are part of this amazing journey. So thank you Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing the show. Thank you for becoming a patron. Thank you for being involved in the Facebook group. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. And that's pretty much a wrap here for episode 200. It's been an amazing journey. I look forward to at least 200 more. What a fantastic way to start the week. We finish off the Pro Tour. Congratulations again to Jerry Thompson, episode 181, if you want to go back and hear him. He is a fantastic guy, and I am so happy that he took down the Pro Tour. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you to the patrons for keeping the show going. Without you, this would not be possible. And thank you to Paragon City Games for supporting the show and becoming a sponsor. Prodigies, you know how it goes. I can't wait to connect with you again real soon. And until then, I'm Sean of the Gathering, and we will see you in the next cast.
This round of MTG Pro Tutor is over. So you don't miss a single episode of MTG Mastery, be sure to subscribe to the show on your preferred podcast listening service for more exclusive interviews, deck building tips, and elite content. Or visit mtgprotutor.com to stream it straight from the source. We look forward to helping you think and play like a pro.